Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Damon Thayer. I am with the law firm of Jenner & Block, and I represent the appellant, Scott Gustin. This direct criminal appeal concerns a prisoner-on-prisoner assault that took place after prison officials assigned a Sereno gang member to the same cell as a Nortino gang member. It is uncontested that before making this ill-fated cell assignment, prison officials knew that these two gangs were bitter enemies engaged in what prison officials described as an all-out war. In fact, prison officials testified that they knew that Mr. Gustin had a pending retaliation obligation against the Serenos based on a recent Sereno attack against a Nortino, and additionally that Mr. Gustin would have an on-site obligation should any Sereno trespass in his cell.
But, you know, I mean, it's a difficult argument you're presenting, I think, at best. And I'm going to put to one side for the moment, although you can come back to it, the fact that the assault doesn't even occur in the cells. I understand that the assault occurs in a common area. But, I mean, it seems to me like prison officials are aware in general that they're dealing with violent people. But the concept that you have is that the prison officials have some obligation to enforce the constitution of the Nortenos. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me to think that they do. They certainly have an obligation to prevent violence as well as possible, and they're strip-searching Mr. Gustin, and they're relying on his assurances that he's not going to attack people. But I am not sure how much further they have any obligation to go.
Your Honor, that's a very good point. Now, in this case, we're not asking the prison officials to enforce a certain gang's constitution.
But it sounds like you are, actually.
It sounds like you're saying that prisons must have reserved sections for Gang A and a separate section for Gang B, and that if it doesn't have that, it can't criminally prosecute gang members who commit violence. Now, we've actually had litigation in which district judges have held that the constitution forbids what you're arguing for. That is, that prisons are forbidden to have exclusive sections by gangs because that enables gangs to take over the prison and brutalize the prisoners who are not members of any gang. Right? Running a prison is extremely difficult, but the idea that if a prison assigns a member of a different gang to your cell, you're entitled to beat him up and kill him without any criminal liability rather passes belief.
Your Honor, that is much more abstract than our narrow argument. Now, in this case,
it's precisely your argument. Whatever your argument is, it doesn't have anything to do with entrapment, because there was not only no inducement, your client was, by his own declaration, not only predisposed but obliged by his gang membership to commit this assault. So there can't possibly be any entrapment here.
Your Honor, prison officials knew all of these facts, though. They knew, and these are not normal gangs. These are two of the most violent...
Look, the kind of argument you're making is the kind of argument that a terrorist makes. He says, unless you stop doing what I don't like, I will blow up innocent people, and it will be your responsibility for not meeting my demands rather than mine for having set off the bomb. Your client's view is, unless you do what I want, which is keep this person away from me, I will kill him, and it will be your responsibility rather than mine. Well, we don't accept the terrorist defense.
Your Honor, just to be frank, under that view, prison officials could essentially put two people together in the same cell when they knew that they would have to fight each other.
And so doesn't that mean that the essence of your argument really should have been, I don't think it was, that this is one of those failure to protect cases, which we do see a lot in prisons. If a prisoner says, I am at risk, now I'll explain in a minute why, unfortunately, in Mr. Gustin's case, that may not be too helpful, but, you know, I am at risk if you put me with this other person because he's going to assault me, then I guess at most maybe Mr. Gustin could say it was some sort of anticipatory self-defense, which would certainly lose on these facts, But, you know, your real theory is that the prison was creating a dangerous situation somehow by putting these two people together. And, you know, I could certainly imagine a lawsuit on behalf of Mr. Padilla saying that you put me in danger. Hard to see where Mr. Gustin comes in.
Yes, Your Honor. We did consider other theories for this appeal, and one of those was some type of anticipatory self-defense. And as Your Honor just said, that would not have worked in this circuit. However, in this context, there really isn't a lot of law out there, whether in the Seventh Circuit or anywhere, that deals with entrapment in the prison context. Here,
no, this is the most creative argument I've ever seen in this area, trying to say it's entrapment. I mean, I know you rejected the other one because you thought you couldn't get any traction, but this is really hard to get traction to.
Well, thank you, Your Honor, yeah. And we do believe that this is the argument we could get the most traction on in this case. But there is something underneath here. And if we look at just what the prison knew, and every day prisons are using more and more technology, and they know more and more about who can be celled together and who cannot be celled together. Now, there are constitutional limits. The Seventh Circuit has set limits. Our Supreme Court has set limits on what distinctions you can make. I believe that this distinction can still be made, because I'm not arguing the general proposition that certain gangs cannot be celled together. What we're arguing is that when the prison knows that my client is simply facing a life or death situation, he would be killed by his gang if he didn't attack this person. Now, is that good prison policy? That's a question for this.
How good is the evidence on that? You keep saying that in your brief. But the government challenges it somewhat. It really does presuppose a complete breakdown in the prison's ability to respond to threats to Mr. Gustin.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm just wondering, you know, first of all, there aren't very many Norteños in this prison. There's Mr. Gaito, right, and Mr. Gustin, maybe one other person. So I don't know who's going to execute Mr. Gustin for failing to attack a Sereno. I'm a little worried at this, you know, if I don't do X, somebody's going to kill me. That's a significant allegation to make. Don't you need some proof of that?
Yes, Your Honor, and as this court is well aware, this theory was not presented to the district court, which is why we're here today under a plain error standard. And conceitedly, the record is not what we would like it to be. But we believe that we've made a sufficient minimal showing, which is required for an entrapment.
And your minimal showing is the constitution of the gang.
Yes, Your Honor, the constitution of the gang primarily, their on-site code is actually separate and distinct from their constitution. Gangs, they have a general constitution, and then they follow various different codes and maybe some rules from there. And prison officials admit that they knew about all of these, though, which is what establishes...
another clause in its constitution, and it says any member who refuses a profitable drug transaction will be killed because he's not keeping up the gang's profits. And an agent then offers a member a profitable drug transaction, which he takes. Would he be immune from criminal punishment? I think on your theory he would be.
Your Honor, I do not believe that certain individual would be immune from criminal punishment.
It's the same sort of argument you're making.
I agree with that, Your Honor, but here we have three separate bases upon which his prison inmates would want to kill him. And there's a big distinction, as even the prison officials recognize, between street gangs and prison gangs. Prison gangs traditionally being more strict. Now, I can see that my initial 8 minutes have expired, and I thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Mr. Hartzler.
Good morning again, Joe Hartzler for the United States. I'm going to rely on my brief, but there is one thing I'd like to add in my brief. This court decided the case of United States versus Danny Orr just last year. And there's a superb block quote in the middle of page 868, which says, as a preliminary matter, we reject Orr's argument that the district court should have made the entrapment defense available to Mr. Orr. Such an argument ignores the burden of persuasion and affirmative defenses, which is placed squarely on the shoulders of the defendant claiming entrapment. It was Orr's, the emphasis in the original, Orr's responsibility to raise the entrapment defense, and it is most definitely not the responsibility of the prosecutor or the judge to do the work of defense counsel. This is the second time I've been here, Danny Orr, and again today, on a case in which an entrapment defense was not raised in the district court. It's an affirmative defense. It should be the responsibility of the defendant to raise it. It should not be the obligation of the district court to raise an entrapment defense.
I take it that the defendant would actually have a good objection if the district judge had raised entrapment sua sponte, because then you would have been entitled to introduce his criminal record and basically depict him as a career criminal.
Imagine the moment at trial when the judge said, I'm thinking of introducing or offering an entrapment defense. I mean, the prosecution would then jump in for joy.
The lawyer would have gone ballistic.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been the problem for the government on appeal had the judge given an entrapment instruction in this case. All right. If there are no further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hartzler. Anything further, Mr. Thayer?
Yes, Your Honor. Just a few points.
Thank you. So, Your Honor, the government essentially is relying on this theory that the district court cannot raise an entrapment defense or even open up a dialogue with the parties about it. And, yes, I totally appreciate the fact that that is not generally the responsibility of a district court. However, that is the whole purpose of plain error review. When the district court makes a mistake, the Seventh Circuit is there to fix it.
Are you aware of any case in the history of American jurisprudence where a district judge has been reversed on the ground that it failed to inject entrapment into a case?
Not entrapment, Your Honor.
No, and for the reason that Mr. Hartzler and I just discussed. It's very easy to see how an entrapment defense could injure a defendant, seriously injure a defendant.
Your Honor, to be clear, Mr. Gustin's position is that had the district court opened up this dialogue with counsel and had Mr. Gustin's trial counsel rejected it or decided that he wanted to continue pursuing this misidentification theory, we would not be here today. However, that is not what happened. Under those circumstances, Mr. Gustin's only recourse would be an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. But that is not what happened. In this case, instead, the district court saw what we believe was strong enough evidence to surpass that minimal showing, where it at least should have said to counsel outside the presence of the jury, there's some entrapment evidence here.
And let me just ask you, just the implications of what you're arguing, so that if a district judge had to just say, I want to deal with entrapment, I think that's an issue here, that just invites the district court on any issue the district court might see as a potential issue to just sort of raise it. I mean, you realize that's what this could lead to.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then the other thing on the gang thing, one gang could have a rule, and that it would say you have to fight if you're confronted. The other gang says you have to respond if somebody fights against you. So everybody gets in a huge fight and nobody's held accountable.
Your Honor, that's not our position. Our position is that these prison officials have boasted of their expertise, how much they knew about all of these gangs, especially these two very violent gangs, and they have intelligence gathering activities. And they knew exactly what would take place, we believe, in this case. I see that my time has expired. Unless the court has any further questions,
Thank you, Mr. Thayer. We appreciate your willingness and that of your law firm to accept this case and your assistance to the court and your client. The case is taken under advisement.